that point. And then I think I'm afraid that I will be a little off topic because taking into account what I've seen so far since two last days, so I will be a little off topic, so please consider this talk rather like a social event. Just relax and enjoy. I will try my best to be simple, as simple as possible. So the topic I'm going to talk about is motivated especially by the problem of a precise mathematical formulation of quantum chance time theory with non-compact gauges. But from my talk, this will not be visible. But quantum dipoles, as the practice shows, find more and more applications, not only in topology. For example, they find themselves also in the context of topological strings, for example. Okay, so let me start from very simple basic thing, namely Q binomial formula. It's very similar to usual binomial formula. So we write two letters, D plus W, raise it to power n, and then we write a sum for k from 0 to n. Some coefficient which denoted n k, but then instead of round brackets, we put square brackets and put label q and write v to k w n minus k. And here, so what I assume. The first thing is that V and W are not commutative. So I assume that they are elements of some abstract algebra which verify this commutation relation, W, V equal Q, V, W. Q is just some non-zero complex number, but at some moment, it will be inside a unit disk later absolute value of q will be less than 1. This is the first thing, and the second thing is this binomial coefficients. They are given by a formula very similar to the usual binomial coefficients, but I am using a little bit different notation maybe here. So I put q in parentheses with subindex n, divide by same symbol with subindex k, and that same symbol with subindex n minus k. And this symbol is, by definition, is the following thing. It is 1 if k is 0. And the finite product of this form if k is positive. And you can easily see actually that this formula really generalizes usual binomial formula in the limit when q goes to 1. Because you can, after appropriate normalization, you can see that this symbol goes to k factorial times, just k factorial. Okay, but I think that many of you have seen already this formula. So this formula is my starting point, and it can be proved like the usual binomial formula by induction. What I'm going to do, I'm going to rewrite this formula differently. So let us first use this fact, this explicit formula, and divide by the numerator of that fraction. So we get the V plus W over N divided by Q sub N equal sum over K to 0 to N V to K divided by Q parenthesis sub K W N minus K divided by Q sub minus K. So now it looks more symmetric, the three terms. And now what I'm going to do is to sum over all N. So then I have sum over N from 0 to infinity, V plus W of N, divided by Q of N. And in the right hand side, so we will get a double sum, and we can change the order of summations and shift the value. Okay, I skip this part, and then so after doing this two more steps, we get sum over k will be exterior sum, change the order. And then the sum over n will be from k to infinity, but we shift n by k to make it from 0 to infinity. And then this shift exactly, we precisely remove this minus k from this term. So we will get sum v k over q parenthesis sub k w n q parenthesis sub k. And as you see, the double sum factorizes, and if we define, so we get an identity f sub q of v plus w equal f sub q of v, f sub q of w, where f sub q of x is by definition this series. And this is identity in non-commutative algebra, or some completion of the non-commutative algebra generated by U and V. But one should think of it as a generating series for the numerical identities for coefficients. It's, in this sense, we don't need a topology, we just see it as a shorthand notation for sequence of identities, numerical identities. But in the sequel, I will try to extract from this identity true quantum identity in a functional analysis sense, in a Hilbert sense. Okay, and this identity actually is known since early 50s, and is known as the Schrödinger identity. And the identity is very suggestive to call the function fq of x a quantum exponential. Okay, now what next I wanted to say. Yeah, so let me make a remark. One way of doing you should assume that n's So if you are talking about nth root of capital N root of unity, then you should assume that V power capital N equal W power capital N equals 0. And then you will have a finite series with no problem in the denominator. So this is a one way of thinking. But you can just try to asymptotically expand this identity around the root of unity Q. That's the other way of looking at it. And you will get what is called a cyclic analog of the function F. Okay, so let me continue with a remark on functional equation behind the function fq of x. So let us do an exercise. So what we do is that let us subtract from fq of x fq of qx. Then what we see, we substitute two infinite series, collect them together, and here I can factorize two terms like this. And for n equal 0, so we don't have any contribution, so we can write it from 1. And then by using the formula for the denominator, I recall that again is n. So we can write this as n amount to infinity x n over q n minus 1. And then I can put x here and put here n minus 1. And then we see that we end up with x times fq of x. Now we can solve it for f of x. Fq of x is equal fq of qx over 1 minus x. And then we can continue applying consecutively the same equation. We get something intermediate like qk x over x semicolon qk. Here I'm using a new notation x semicolon qk. This is called the Q-Poch-Hamner symbol, which is 1 minus x, 1 minus qx, up to 1 minus q, k minus 1 x. And now, if we assume that the absolute value of q is less than 1, as I promised, that at some moment we will switch to line inside the unit disk. And if we take, so in the left hand side, we have something which is independent of k. So we can just send k to infinity. And then we end up with fq of 0 divided by x semicolon q infinity. And the fact that, so you're looking at the definition of fq. We see immediately that this is 1, and this exercise gives us an explicit formula for f of x as an infinite product, and it is very nice because it gives us fq as a meromorphic function on the entire context plane. While the series is convergent only inside the unit disk in the x-plane. So this formula is very nice in that respect.
Yeah, so that's what the remark about F. And then based on that, so we do another exercise, namely, we take this argument now, D plus W, and I assume that V is in the okay, if assume that V is invertible, then V plus W can be written as a V1 plus V inverse W. And so this equality is equivalent to 1 minus x equal fq of qx divided by fq of x. And now we can identify this 1 minus x with this 1 plus v minus 1 w. And write it like v times fq of minus. So x should be minus this, right? So q times v minus 1 w divided by fq of minus v minus 1 w. And then we can pass this V through that F. Okay, but the F carries an argument which does not commute with V, which means that we have to conjugate the argument by V on passing. So we will get F. And on passing V through W, so V commutes with V, so V doesn't commute with W. So on passing through W, remember that our algebra was WV equal QVW, which is equivalent to VW equal Q inverse WV. And so when we pass V through W, we should add the factor q minus 1 on passing, which will cancel this q. So eventually we will get the fq of minus v minus 1 w, v, but this I keep intact, fq of minus v minus 1 w. That's a formula which I will be using. Now we in here. So now we can replace V plus W by this combination. But here we have a pure conjugation. So these conjugating elements can be pulled out of the function F. So we get that this is equal F Q minus V minus 1 W. F of FQ of V. 1 of fq of minus v minus 1 w. And now I'm going to forget about this. I'm going to equate this to this.
So you apply fq to this identity now, no?
Sorry?
So here you get an identity and to which you apply fq to get the identity.
Yeah, and then I use the fact that this is a conjugate, this is inverse of this.
Yeah.
So I pull out just outside the, for any function actually, you can pull it out. Okay, so let me now remove fq's from denominators by multiplying from the right by fq of minus minus 1 w. So equality sum is equivalent to F Q minus V minus 1 W F Q of V equal F Q of V F Q of W of Q of minus V minus 1 W. And it is it would be more economical to write this if we introduce new variable, define u to be minus v minus 1 w, which is equivalent to w equal minus v. And so we are going to forget about w. And so we have to keep in mind that now new variable can commute with v variable like this. And now we forget about w, and then we get the fq of u, fq of v, equal to fq of v, fq of minus uv, vu, fq of u. That's that. The main identity I'm interested in. So this is the kind of quantum entangled identity. That is a point there might be a little contact with the subject of that workshop. So think of associators. But I don't know how this thing related to associators. But anyway, you can count their five terms.
Why quantum pentagon?
Sorry?
Why quantum pentagon? What is a classical pentagon?
This will come later. So originally, so with Fadjiev, we interpreted this as a quantum generalization of a five-term biologarithm identity. So we just expanded this asymptotically when q goes to 1 and extracted in the living order the Rogers five-term identity for dialogue. But the dialogue will come a little bit later because up to now this identity is formal in the sense that it should be thought as generating object for infinite sequence of numerical identities or coefficients of the expansion of those functions in U and V. But my goal is to end up with a true operator and identity in a Hilbert space. More precisely, I'm going to end up with an identity for unitary operators in a Hilbert space. And there will be the object that, which I call Fadjiev's quantum algorithm, which plays the fundamental role in constructing applications. Okay, but before doing this, so I will need the definition. I don't know if this definition exists in the literature, but at least it naturally extends the notion of a normal operator in a Hilbert space. So let me give this definition. So let H be a Hilbert space. And A is a subalgebra, of endomorphisms of H. But H densely defined elements. So here I don't assume that this is a subalgebra of bounded operators. I assume admit also unbounded operators, but with densely defined domains. And then I call then A is called normal if A B star equal B star A for any A B integer. So star is just a conjugate element which is a standard notion in the context of quantum. And it is defined unambiguously if the element you conjugate is densely defined.
So it's not, A is not stable until the star.
Sorry?
A is not stable until the taking of adjoints.
What do you mean not stable?
So if you have an element in A, then it's
star. No, no, not stable. No, no. Yeah, yeah, of course, of course. It's, I don't assume that this is element in A. Mm-hmm. I just assume just some subalgebra, but all conjugates of its elements commute with all elements of A.
And in particular, A can be equal to B, right? So.
Yeah. That's possible. Of course, conjugates can be in A, but in general, I don't assume that.
It means that A and A star are two mutually commuting algebras.
Yeah. And but why I said that this is a very natural definition, because if A is generated by one single element, then this gives us a notion of a normal.
But all elements of A are automatically normal, right?
You're right. In particular. Yeah. But here we have more, right? So we demand that any element commutes with a conjugate of a given element. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the definition. And let me give the idea. The idea of unitarization of the quintuple identity. Poles. Let me see. Yeah. So the first assumption tells me that by restricting my function to the spectrum of U and V, they are normal, right? So the spectral theorem exists for U and V. And the first assumption is that the restriction of the function fq to union of two spectra avoids poles and zeros, if there are any, but there are no zeros actually. Yeah, so.
And where are poles?
Poles are, you know, this is infinite product, it's the inverse of infinite product, so poles just the zeros of that infinite product. Positive, non-negative powers. So that's some, and the second thing is just the normality of the algebra generated. Then, double star implies that GQ of U. Okay, the double star implies double star, where fq is replaced by gq, where gq of z is given by fq of z divided by fq of z complex conjugate. So in other words, this is exponential 2i argument of fq of z. So in other words, from double star, I get another identity where each term is a unit. And the proof is very easy. So you take the conjugate of that, right? Then you reverse the order, and then you take the inverse of that, which is possible due to property 1, but you restore the order, and you multiply the original identity with this new identity. But since the algebra is normal, so the new identity can use with the old identity. So you put the terms in correspondence by pairs, and you get this new identity. Okay, that's the initialization. Yeah, and now let's go to an example. If you study quantum mechanics, then this is standard terminology there. So Q and P. So I put hat just to avoid the confusion with Q as a deformation parameter. And so Q acts on F. So F is any function, okay, so not F sub Q. F of x acts by multiplication, and p hat acts by differentiation. And since we are in L2 of x, of R, so the differentiation should be thought as a, in the sense of distributions. Okay, so these are basic operators, and we can remark that they verify the commutation relation. So, but here I put a number, but it seems to be multiplied by, I think it's in the operator. We have this commutation relation, the famous Heisenberg commutation relations, which, among other things, imply, underlie the Heisenberg uncertainty relation in quantum physics and so on. And just one side remark, which could be important later, if I will have time, that P and Q are unitarily equivalent. Equivalent, P hat equal F. Q hat F star, where F is the integral operator corresponding to Fourier transformation. And in functional analysis, undergraduate part, I think, it is proven that this operator is a unitary operator in L2 of R. So here we have a conjugation, so this is the same as minus 1, and in particular you see that Q is diagonal, so it's vector just the whole real line, and then this formula implies that P has also the spectrum on the whole real line. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to realize U and V operators as functions of P and Q. So let me put it here. Even if this is the easy theorem, but it will look might look strange if there will be no theorem at all. So the theorem tells the following thing. For any theta in in 0 pi over 2 in the semi-open interval, the operators u equal minus e pi I b squared e 2 pi b q, and b equal minus e my, pi r b squared p 2 pi b p hat, where b is equal is defined to be I e to the power I theta pure phase, the element of the unit circle. So are such that first thing is that uv equal q vu for q given by e 2 pi I b squared, and second the algebra A generated by UV is normal. So to the statement of the theorem, these multiplicative factors do not matter. But they will matter in the implication of assumptions in the initialization idea.
Is this essentially getting a slide itself there?
Yes, if B is a pure imaginary, then yes, if U and D unitary. But here they are not. Because B is on the unit circle and the imaginary axis is excluded. So they are never unitary. Okay, then what we do next, we use this realization. And this is the part of next part of the theorem. That double star with FQ replaced by GQ is equivalent to the identity phi B of P hat phi B of Q hat equal phi B of Q hat phi B of P hat plus Q hat phi B of P hat. So essentially you recognize the same structure as here. So the only thing that I inverted. So it means that you have to invert this identity and then you get the justice. And now the normalization here, the choice of the normalization here is crucial for the structure of that identity. As you see, the argument of phi is always real in the sense that P and Q are self-conjugate as well as P plus Q is self-conjugate. While in the identity, if you recall, it was minus VU and with other normalization, the spectrum of minus VU will not be the spectrum of U and V. But this choice of normalization ensures that you stay with the same spectrum for all three operators, U, V, and minus VU. And now you this is the final construction because this identity for phi B is an identity for unitary operators with perfectly well-defined terms, all five terms, taking into account the spectral decompositions of Heisenberg operators. Because P plus Q hat is also unitarily equivalent to Q. Let me put this remark P plus Q why? Because P hat plus Q hat equal E minus pi I Q hat squared P hat E pi I Q hat squared. But here I have explicitly defined the unitary operator because Q has the spectrum of the real line. And by using the Baker-Hausdorff extension, you will see that there are what would be two terms in the whole infinite extension, which correspond to P plus Q. But P itself is unitarily equivalent to Q by the previous. So you see that the quantum identity for phi b of x is the identity for unitary operators. So you, as you see, we ended up with perfectly well-defined functional analytic identity starting from a formal identity in UMD. And actually, this is just one particular example. And if you manage to realize this unitarization idea by different representation, you can hope to end up with another unitary five-term identity. And this is indeed the case. Yeah, so let me precise the structure. So phi b of x is a map from R to T, which is a unit circle. Complex unit circle. And which is more or less evident from the reconstruction. And phi b of x is given explicitly as a ratio of two infinite products, minus e pi I e squared plus 2 pi b x. Same column e 2 pi I e squared. This is q, if you remember. Now you remember fq was in the denominator, but I inverted, so now this is the inverse of fq. And in the denominator we have just a complex conjugate of all that. So which means that we have to write minus e minus pi I b inverse, b minus 2, because b, remember, it is on the unit circle. So the conjugate of it is inverse, plus 2 pi b inverse, x is real, e minus 2 pi I b squared, infinite. And this from this formula, so this is what I call a Fadier quantum dialogue. Has many remarkable properties. Let me just list a few of them.
Before you erase, so you just wrote formulas for U and V?
Yeah.
What are they? Do they come out anything? So e to the p hat is translation, e to the q hat is multiplication by a character.
Yeah, but the translation in complex domain. Right, not just along the real line, because this is complex, not pure imaginary. If it would be pure imaginary, then the U would be unitary.
Okay.
Then you are right. It is just translation.
Okay.
But in this form, so the domain of those operators, these are highly unbounded operators, and so they have their own domains. And in particular for P, the domain will be square integrable functions, which are extended on into complex strip, the way that the shifted in the complex domain function again belongs to L2 of R. So that defines it's the domain of that operator.
So both of them will be of that form?
Yes. But E to Q is a multiplication operator, but multiplication, so you have to restrict the decay rate of L2 functions at infinity to kill the growth by multiplying by these exponentials.
Okay.
But since they are unitarily equivalent, so these domains are sent to each other by Fourier transformations. Okay, let me list a few examples.
Sorry, you were about to erase this when I stopped you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. First remark is that phi b of x admits analytic continuation. Continuation to be belonging to the whole complex plane with excluded imaginary axis. So remember that B was just part of the unit circle. But looking at this formula, now forget that this is a now pure phase, just look at this fraction. And then, so this function as an analytic function of B admits an extension up to a complement of the imaginary axis. And even more, it will have the symmetry properties. B of x will be equal to phi b 1 over b of x will be equal to phi minus b of x. So in this plane, so this is excluded. So you can restrict yourself just to the first quadrant due to the symmetry properties. And the real line is included. And the real line, if you look at the form of Q here, when B is real, Q finds itself on the unit circle, so that the neither numerator nor denominator do not make any sense, right? But the fraction is perfectly well defined. That is the original observation of Fadier. Because the problem, the physics, physical applications of the function dictate that the Q should be on the unit circle. And the infinite product formula, which itself satisfies formal five-term identity, is not suitable for physical applications for that reason. But this fraction makes perfect sense. Okay, and then second remark, is that phi b of x admits analytic continuation in x in C as a neuromorphic function. And this is even more easily visible from here. Right? This is an entire function in X with explicitly known zeros. Likewise, the denominator, so you have just a fraction of two entire aerodynamic functions, so it is a neuromorphic on the whole complex plane. And in this complex plane, it satisfies functional equations. So, satisfying functional equations 5b of x minus ib over 2 is equal 1 plus e 2 pi b x 5b of x plus ib over 2. So you see that phi b now, for any b actually in this extended domain can be calculated just by using this functional equation by knowing its values in a given in a strip of width ib. And another functional equation is more simple. It gives the value of phi b of x times phi b of minus x. And this happens to be equal phi b of 0 squared times the Gaussian exponential. And even more, this constant can be, the value at 0 can be calculated, and it is a nice number actually, function of b. You can recognize some distinguished numbers like 24 in this formula. Yeah, and the last remark is the connection with the classical Dielog function, which is the connection which I promised at some moment in the beginning. So the limit when b goes to 0, 2 pi I b squared log of phi b of x is given by a Euler Dielog of minus e to minus x. That's this last remark justifies the name actually for the function phi b. And so if you solve this like this, that's a physics way of writing this kind of limits. E to 1 over 2 pi I b squared, then you recognize typical quasi-classical behavior in quantum theory, which is accessible, by the way, for deformation quantization. Sorry for that, because H bar finds in the denominator. Okay, I think I stopped here. Thank you.
Quantum
trial? Oh, no idea.
What?
No idea. I wish I would. I'd like to know.
Well, what's the obstacle to generalize this? Or?
Yeah, the obstacle is an algebraic property, like five-term identity for Dielog.
Oh, but there is the Kummer identity or Gontrop's identity.
Yeah. So, but what is a quantum anomaly? Is it some kind of Q identity? No idea.
There is a similar phenomenon in quantum SLT. Can you also?
This is clear because so you if you go from quantum group side, then what is called the Heisenberg double of Hopf algebra always leads to a five-term identity.
This is positive part of it.
Yeah, you take positive part of the quantum group, you take a Heisenberg double, you end up with the canonical element satisfying a pentagon identity. And then you unitarize it.
So maybe I'll expose that I didn't understand anything, but is there also a similar hexagon identity or in this context?
Yeah, you can extract Young Baxter from that. Yeah, but it is not constant. But on the other hand, this function leads to a representation, among other things, among the TQ of T for realizing Chern-Simons with non-compact groups, in particular, it gives unitary representations of mapping class groups of punctured surfaces. And Sorry, what was the question?
Is there a hexagon?
Yeah, and then mapping class group of a punctured sphere is a braid group, and then a braid group is based on Jan-Bakska. So yes, the answer is.
Any more questions? So, thanks again.
Thank you.